Week two of Between the Lanes, Blake Bennard here with Ryan Curry. Your coverage of the 2016-2017 Arizona State swim and dive team. Ryan Curry, of course, WCSN, Blake Bennard right here with Blaze Sports Collaboration. And Ryan, good to have you back in for another week. Same time, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Really can't wait to get started on this. There's so many exciting things to talk about, really, with this entire swim team altogether. So let's get to it.
Yeah,
let's
so it. Both teams coming off a sweep of Denver. The men just took it to a very talented Denver team, 196-99. That's even exhibitioning a couple of their final races.
That last, like, three races, they didn't score any points. They decided to cut the meat early. And, I mean, that's a shame because they would have added so many more points to what they've already had.
It's kind of a sign of, like, a respect, though. You don't want to, like, just completely annihilate a team.
You don't want to run the score up, really.
I mean, they already almost beat them by 100, but it was the women, though, that really were kind of standing out as a team because they won a very, very, very close race and a close meet, 152.5 to 135.5. It came down to the final two events because they were actually trailing 120 to 119, and then Marlies Ross came in with that tie in the 400 IM, and then they came away in the relays as well. But what was it that stood out to you most? Was it that women's team? Was it Cameron Craig? We're going to kind of get into some of the stuff later, but what stood out the most?
Well, I think the biggest thing with the women's team is that Denver had a lot of, like, they had a lot of depth, put it that way. But I think the women, they wanted to keep it interesting. That way, they would keep swimming fast towards the end. That's not to take away from the men, because the men just kept swimming fast no matter what. But the women, like, kind of thrive off of keeping themselves competitive, because that's how they fuel themselves. Because we knew a lot of the times last year where they would get behind in a meet and they kind of just shut down. They wouldn't really find any fire to get back into it. And I think
they really weren't able to. They didn't have enough swimmers to get back into it once they were down.
Yeah, and I think with the new depth they have, and obviously with this coaching staff in their second year, they know that, like, they can kind of hang with almost any team. I don't think they're going to be nearly as competitive in Pac-12 as we saw with Denver. But I think the biggest thing is that there obviously are a lot of key swimmers that are performing for the women. And it's just kind of bright for them. And I think they thrive off of keeping competitive, because I fear that if they were to run away with a meet, they would not put in the times that the coaches would want them to, as opposed to keeping it close to the end. Because you saw when they kept it close to the end, I think the biggest thing that won the meet for the women was the sprinters. They did not have the talent to hang with them in distance, but obviously we saw in the 50 free, they took 1 through 4.
Well, yeah, and back to the distance, like, they didn't win that event, but they went 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
And, like, in the thousands. So even though they're not winning their events, they're still placing and getting points in a really valuable way. I mean, I even think to the 400 IM at the very end, the kind of the side of the meet, even though Marlies Ross didn't win that race, Isleta came in third as well, right behind her. So she got them valuable points that they probably wouldn't have been able to have because they didn't have any IMers last year. So the freshman there, he was huge.
Well, the crazy thing is that in college, like, now, winning a race is huge.
Yeah,
huge. It's a 5-point swing between first and second place. So, although, I mean, you look at events like the 1,000-yard free, where, and, you know, in the 400 IM, where ASU took 2 to 4, excuse me, and Denver would take, you know, first and fifth, you know, that's still 10 points in Denver's favor, as opposed to 9 points in ASU's favor.
Yeah.
So, I can't stress enough how important they want to win races on the women's side. And I think that's what kept it close, was Denver didn't have enough depth, but they had some top talent. And what kept it close was the distance events, the stroke events. They were able to win those events. And then ASU would come back in the sprinting events and show them what they're made of.
Finished 1 through 4 in that 50, dude.
And then the moment they tied that race, Denver probably had to realize that, oh no, we're going against these sprinters of Arizona State that are really good, especially Alicia Bush, who went 22.7 it was, or something like that. But she put up a really big show on the women's side, and that obviously was danger for Denver, and that's obviously what cost them the meet towards the end, was not being able to have the spring talent. And having spring talent in college is crucial. You just have to have it.
And, I mean, ASU finished 1 through 4, obviously only get points for 3, so they didn't get Cole Quebec, I think, finished 4th. But
that just goes to show is that you take 1st through 4th on the relay. Well, those are your 4 relay swimmers.
Yeah.
And then that's how you put – and automatically you have 4 fast girls that are faster than your best sprinter.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely can't contend with them. And that definitely showed in that last relay.
Yeah, and that last relay, they went 131.70. That's just over Just over like a second and a half off of a A standard. No, sorry, 2 seconds and a half off of A standards, closing in on a B standard. So
yeah.
Already put in some early nice times. But also Alicia Bush and then Claire Fish in the 50 got some NCAA B standards as well. A really just encouraging victory for the woman. Then also catapults them into number 19 overall in college swimming's rankings.
Yeah.
So, and then the men, which is even, I think, a little bit more surprising, going 10th overall.
Well, no team – well, both teams – this is how crazy points can swing in college swimming. Neither team was ranked at all. Neither team was even close to – I was looking at the honorable mentions outside the top 30, and not a single one of them was even in contention to have that. And I don't really know what it is because Utah definitely has a good team. They have some top swimmers, and ASU easily beat them. And Denver was, I think, had more votes to get into those rankings than Arizona State did. And that, you know, was kind of weird because Denver just didn't have the talent to contend with Arizona State.
And
now
they were,
all of a sudden you beat Denver?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking like in the rankings, Denver's still 31st right now. So maybe like I think we might have overlooked them a teeny bit maybe coming into the meet to some extent and not really giving them the credit that they were due. But still, this men's team is good. And their headline, Cameron Craig, had in another just incredible meet. He's named the Pac-12 Men's Swimmer of the Week as well. And he seems like the entire, in all of his races, both the 100 and the 200 freestyle, he was kind of toying with the swimmers because he was outside smoke in the first one, lane eight, just had an incredible last 50 to come back, go from fourth to first. And the same thing, he had his best split in the 100. I think he went, what was the time he went in the last 50 in the 100?
23.72, which was the fastest split of his race. His leadoff leg was a 23.78. And his next 250s were both in the mid-25s. Easily one of their slower options. And then, I don't know, like...
He did the same thing in his 200, too. He went 23.72, which was the fastest split of his entire 200.
Yeah.
And he came out, I mean, Barkley was leading that race the entire time from start to finish. And then just last turn, just turned it on.
Well, ASU had the three best swimmers in that event, hands down.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
Tomas and Barkley had control of the race for majority of the time. And then... If slowly but surely Cameron Craig was inching up on them because they ran similar splits in the middle 100. But then Cameron Craig just exploded off the wall in that last 50 and just took everyone by surprise. I mean, you go 138.6 in the 200 free this time of year as a freshman. I mean, God can only know what he's going to look like when he's tapered when Pac-12s come around. I'm sure he's going to drop a significant amount of time in the program he's running right now because we saw, like...
And Bowman's pushing them hard right now, too.
They're pushing all of them
hard. Oh, my gosh. Alicia, afterwards, I said, so you know, I know you've been getting really pushed hard in practice, and she just kind of laughed and said, it's been insane. So the fact that they're able to put these times up with the training that they're putting, it's a lot different, I feel like, from where it was last year as well. Yeah. And the fact that they're able to still put these times up right now is impressive.
Well, I also think because Bowman was probably at the time more focused on the transition to Arizona State.
Yeah, getting some recruits.
And then obviously it was an Olympic year last year, so he was obviously focused on making sure Phelps and the rest of his Olympic team had the talent they needed to do to win gold medals because that's where all eyes are on.
Yeah, that's Neil where he's going to make a lot of his money too. Even
I know exactly.
Even if he is the coach of Arizona State.
I mean, now that the Olympics are over, Bowman's got time to focus on his team. He's really implementing he calls it the method. That's his practice. He calls it his method for Arizona State, and that's what he's implementing here. And then I think it's working because they're putting up
times. The Bowman effect.
Bowman effect. Call it that.
Oh, and actually, speaking of the Bowman effect, you mentioned immediately when you saw Tatis swim, he said his butterfly just looks so much smoother, right?
Well, I remember a year ago, Tatis had almost kind of like a – this is how much I know about butterfly, me being the most talented butterfly in the world.
We're not.
I think looking at Tatis's stroke a year ago, it was designed to just kind of muscle through the 100 butterfly.
Okay.
You know, he had a very wide swinging arm formation, and he just used all of his shoulder and back muscles to just essentially pull the water. And instead, I know that the best butterflyers tend to have more of a relaxed, elongated stroke.
Like
so that way,
crying out loud.
The recovery is a lot smoother, and then that way they can focus more on just pulling the water beneath them. Tad has spent a lot of effort just kind of swinging his arms over the air. I think Bowman went in there, and probably Misty Hyman as well, changed his stroke technique to more of a relaxed style, and he went mid-47, and it was an incredible time. I remember a year ago, he was going 49s, 48s, and all of a sudden, I think he went 47 against USC a year ago. But I think they may have had a little bit of rest before that meet. But obviously, looking at Tatis, it did not look like the same butterfly that we saw from a year ago. And he got fourth place 100 fly at Pac-12s with that different stroke technique. Just so now that it's changed, I think that we're going to see a much faster and a much more efficient Tatis Deskinis in the 100 fly. I think that's good because having depth in that event that's obviously, I think in college swimming, it's probably the most difficult event right now because there's so much talented.
Yeah.
If you look at Texas, they've got so many guys. If you look at Cal, they've got so many guys. So I think if ASU wants to contend with them, they're going to have the depth that they have. And I think they do have it with Park and Andrew Porter,
who swam really well against Denver as well. I mean, everyone swam well. The breaststrokers, Christian Lorenz, Capitan had a really, really, really good night afternoon, I should say. I think both got B standards.
They did. They both went 54 points. Capitan went 54.5 and Christian went 54.6 and 100 breast. Christian, talked to him today. Christian said his shoulder's feeling better. However, he still gets sore from time to time, but he's just excited to get back to official training and putting all of the work in because, yeah, I think he realizes that he can be a lot faster, and I think obviously the team realizes he can be a lot faster. So it's just a matter about getting in shape and getting the right time because I think right now it's just a matter of going through the progression up until wintertime hits, and once wintertime hits, it's just going to be a grind into the end.
Oh. It's always like the winter time is literally the worst time for these swimmers.
Worst time because feel for them.
At the very least, they got school off. And
at the least, however, they got a much advanced practice schedule, and that's where all the time gets put in. So that's going to be really where they're going to see where they go from there.
We mentioned Craig with his really impressive kind of come from behind victories, but there was one that really came out of nowhere to some extent. I think that was Zach Pody.
Yeah, in the 100, in the 200 back.
Because that's Perry's event.
It is Perry's event. I mean, it's still Perry's event.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, he threw down a 146.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one thing we know about Barclay Perry is that he swims well during dual meets, but he swims a lot better at big meets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
U of A last year,
he just absolutely exploded, tied his school record, and I think he improved on that at both NCAAs and Pac-12s. So I think right now, I think he's in a good spot right now with the 147. I think that's where he was at last year.
Yeah.
Obviously he would want to be at a better place than that. But Pody obviously is just going to add depth. A year ago, Barclay Perry was their only 200 backstroker. And then when you're going against Cal and Stanford, they've got obviously multiple guys that can do those events. So I think that's just what it is, just having top depth in that event. And I think that's definitely going to help him going forward. The surprising thing to me about that event was having Reed Elliott swim it. Because he's usually just a sprinter in the 100 fly, 100
well,
free.
I feel like they have a little bit more versatility with him now because they have so much more depth. They can kind of pick
and they can really move where they want. And we can't forget about him because he's such a key swimmer to those, yeah, to those 100 fly, 100 free events.
He finished top 8 last year in the 100 back?
I don't know about top 8, but I think he was definitely top 16.
He definitely was top 16. So, but like, I mean, they can use him wherever they need to now because there's so much depth.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously he's just really talented. He's going to be the main guy to lead off that B relay, B medley relay.
Stacked.
And I mean, they're going to need to use him because that B medley relay is absolutely absurd. I mean, I think they put Pody on it, but I think having Reed go on it would be, Reed went faster than Pody did in the 100 back split on that medley relay this past weekend. And then they've got pick your poison with Tebow or Christian as the B relay. It doesn't really matter who you put on it. Then they put Andrew Porter and then Patrick Park. Now, that's absurd because I think Andrew Porter may have won the 100 fly that week. It could have been Tatis or it could have been him. But you've got three butterflies that are all 47, and then, I don't know, pick your poison wherever you want to put them on the medley relay. I think whatever the coaches decide to do to try to put them in record-breaking contention doesn't really matter. You could go with Tatis or Andrew Porter, the butterfly leg, or Patrick Park for so be it. The thing that's going to be interesting is, you know, do you keep Richie Bowis at that backstroke leg or do you put in Reed Elliott and then change it up and put Richie Bowis at the freestyle leg and have Tatis do butterfly or Andrew Porter do butterfly? That's what's going to be interesting because right now they've got Cameron Craig in that event. But I think obviously when they get to a bigger meet, they're going to want to keep Cameron Craig, on longer distance relays like the 800 free relay and both 400 medley and freestyle.
Yeah, because he's already shown he throws down a killer 100, yeah. 200 time. He could probably be more value there than as opposed to just a 50.
And I think if you look at that, when they eventually put together that 800 free relay, they're going to have so much talent with Barclay Perry, Tadas Deskinis.
Tomas, potentially.
Not Tadas, excuse me. Tomas, you're right. And Cram and Craig. And then they'll probably put anyone from, you know, Richard Boas to Patrick Park as that other 200 freestyler leg, because they have the talent to do it. They just need to put it in the right spot. So they're loaded on all relay fronts. It's just a matter of where does the coaches want to put them in.
Yeah. And so looking ahead to this week, they got USC on Friday, the men do, and then the women are going to be playing UCLA on Saturday, which is going to be interesting because the Bruins just came off of kind of an upset. They were ranked 15th in the nation, and then Wazoo beat them last weekend. So maybe coming back with a little fire underneath them, but it should be interesting.
It'd be interesting to see if UCLA has got a glimpse of the mid-training bug where they're just kind of really broken down. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not really putting up times they want to do. So it's going to be interesting to see what their coaches do to prepare them for Arizona State, because we both know that ASU is going to come in with a lot of fire because they're undefeated and they want to make a big statement in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And if I was UCLA, I'd be a little worried because going against those sprinters is not going to be fun.
Yeah.
And if you look at the men's side, when they go against USC, USC's got a lot of talent. You know, they're a very, very good team. They've got so many guys. And the one thing that I want to see is, I haven't seen it yet, is if Santo Condorelli, their Olympian from Canada, if he's on their team, because he's the type of guy you can pretty much put wherever you want. And if USC has him, it's really dangerous because they've got a lot more depth behind him. And they didn't have him a year ago, so if they have him this year, Arizona State's going to have to really move some things around to contend with him in their lineup. And they can obviously do that because they've got a lot of talent, but ASU is legit, but the Trojans are also very legit.
For what it's worth, take into it what you will, read into it what you will, they are ranked 29th in the latest rankings. The only team that is above ASU in the men's side is California, which is a little bit surprising. I would have thought they might have held off a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's a little shocking early.
It's still really, really early. I think once December comes around and after the big invitational meets finish, we're actually going to see what times teams are putting up and what teams are capable of putting up. And I think that's when you'll see College Swimming update their standings accordingly.
Right
ASU
now, it's just
10th
early season.
Is just. I don't want to say they're ranked too high, but being ranked much higher than Stanford and USC right now is just a little bit much for me, because Stanford is so good this year. They got so many good guys on that team. They're looking at, you know, so many top competitors that are going to compete on a national basis. You know, they've got Curtis Ogren and they've got Tom Kramer and they've got so many other guys that are just, you know, really, really talented at what they want to do. So I think looking at Stanford right now as a team is definitely – I think they got more depth than Arizona State does. Not a whole lot more. And I think Cal – obviously, we know what Cal is capable of doing. It's just shocking to me that to put Arizona State at 10th right now. You know, I don't know if I'd put them – I'd definitely rank them in the top 20, but a little too early to say that they're top 10 caliber. I mean, I think eventually they can get there. I just think right now is probably a little bit much.
Yeah, so that'll just about wrap it up. I'm just trying to find the times. USC, yeah, that's right. It's Friday at 2, and then the woman's time is I kind of halt and...
Well, they both are swimming USC.
Yeah, and then, 2, I'm looking for the UCLA. It's 11. 11 okay. On Saturday. So both will be playing USC Friday at 2. UCLA will be the following day at 11. We were thinking about a road trip, but it probably ain't going to work out.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know if our friends at Cronkite will be very happy with us, but we'll see. We'll see.
Regardless, this has been episode 2 of Between the Lanes. Ryan Curry, Blake Bernard, Walter Cronkite Sports Network, plus Blaze Sports. You know, it's always a good combo. Any closing thoughts, Ryan?
No.
World Series prediction?
Oh, Cubs.
Go Cubs.
Give me a Cubs, man. I want to see history get made. Any right. team that can beat the Dodgers is a fan of me because I'm from the Bay Area.
Screw the Dodgers. I hate the Dodgers. Anyways, enough right. personal opinions. Ryan, I'm sure we'll probably be the same time next week.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Until then, see ya. Give me